Game On 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Stop the bus, Jenny Green. Kids taking their first steps. Lads earning the curtains. Thank God we made it. It's Friday, the 5th of February, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Donica and Jenny Murphy on the team selections for Cardiff and why the Ireland-Wales rivalry stands out.
And obviously, from a Welsh perspective, we're acutely aware of being in the Pro 14 of the domestic success that some of the Irish provinces have had. You know, it's inevitably carried over into the international window, but it's probably more from the past competition games where we've obviously, you know, whichever team has won has gone on to do well in the championship. So it's not a bad thing, but to have them first out, I think, from, you know, whether you're Irish or Welsh is a mouthwatering one to see what's going to happen.
Plus, in the Premier League, it's the big one. Alan Cawley will preview Liverpool versus Man City.
Beautifully played. Foden tucks it away. 3-0, and Liverpool hang their heads, and Manchester City celebrate what's turning out to be pretty emphatic here.
We've Dervla O'Rourke on Olympic prospects, Irish athletics action, and her strong showing in Ireland's fittest family. You can explain yourself later, Donica. Plus, we've Jeff Shepherd on Sunday's Super Bowl 55.
And they have done it. Chiefs are Super Bowl champions here in Miami as they win it here in Super Bowl 54.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM and we would love to hear from you. Marie, I'll leave for one night. And yourself and Ruby managed to give the Welsh lads the ultimate team talk. You had Stephen Ferris on and he actually got a golden nugget out of him that I know if I was in that Welsh camp, I would have plastered over every room in the hotels, every urinal before you go out to see, in every bathroom, every team room. Are you happy about yourselves?
Let's hear it.
Stephen, Wales have brought back in Dan Lidiot to counteract the breakdown. Which of the Irish back rows do you think is most capable of dealing with him?
I'm not sure about Dan Lidiot. To be honest, I think his best years are behind him. I wouldn't have any bother saying that to his face as well. He's been an exceptional player for Wales and for the Lions over the years, but for me, I think he's just... Yes, he does offer something different, and running around, diving at people's feet, it'll only get you so far. He's not a particularly good ball carrier. He isn't particularly good in the line-out. I haven't seen enough of a work rate out of him when he's been playing club rugby, and he hasn't worn an international jersey for a while, but maybe he's going to offer something different that Wayne Pivac and his coaching team are looking at. I'm not so sure, but I would be very interested to see if he starts, and if he does start, if I was CJ Stander or Will Connors, whoever's going to start in the back row, I'd be licking my lips, to be honest with you.
I still don't even know what to say about it.
First of all, do you agree with him?
I don't agree with him. I'm not surprised. And Stephen's right. I think he fully believes that. And he would say it to Dan Lidiot's face. He's that type of a character. He was always that in our dressing room. He was the guy that would hold people accountable. And he wasn't afraid of an uncomfortable conversation. But I'd be looking forward... I know we've Jenny on shortly. And I'm looking forward to chatting to her about it. But I actually, looking at Connacht versus the Ospreys, I thought he was incredible.
Okay. Well, he is starting for Wales. And just on the point of the dressing room chat beforehand, or the team talk beforehand, does things like...
Yes.
Do they come up? Like, is that...
Marie, you use anything. You really use anything. Because you need something. Like, if you consider the start of a rugby game is a collision. And you just have to get yourself to a kind of arousal state to just want to hop your body off things. And, you know, there has been, you know, people in the media saying things. But when it comes from someone like Stephen Ferris, who's a lion, and everyone knows he's a good player, that carries massive... massive weight. That's a sledgehammer. I don't agree with it. I'll be interested in Jenny's view. I think he's a quality player, and he's, you know, I think, but if, for someone like Dan Lydiate now to have that, I think that's actually extra motivation for him to put in a bigger game. The one thing, I know everyone will go, oh, it's a pity the crowds aren't there. Part of this game, I wonder, would it be an advantage to Ireland to have a crowd there? Because at some point, if the Welsh team weren't going well, they would voice it, you know. So, look, it's all the stuff that goes on around it. You just, it's amazing how someone saying something outside of the bubble can affect it.
Well, Jenny Murphy is on the line. Jenny, has somebody ever said anything about you that affected you before a game?
I'm sure I've been slated a few times. Like both your, yeah, like your teammates did, like put you under a bit of pressure and outside of that, but like it's, yeah, you use that as a motivation, and a lot of the time it was very tactical the way they did it, and then afterwards it'd be like, oh, we're only messing, but it worked. To be honest,
we've lost Jenny there, so don't.
Oh, there she is.
Back. I might actually just get the producer to give you a shout back, Jenny, yeah, because the line is in great. Tonica, tell us the Irish team.
Yeah, we mentioned it there. Yeah, we've our team in. It's Hugo Keenan, Keith Earls, and James Lowe are our back three. Centres of Gary Ringrose, Robbie Henshaw. The axle of our halfbacks are Johnny Sexton, who will captain us, with Conor Murray, and then Keane Healy, Rob Herring, Andrew Porter. Tadhg Byrne comes in to partner James Ryan in the second row, and everyone was interested where he would play or would he be involved. He is, he's in the row, and it'll be interesting to see how he goes. A reshuffled back row of Peter O'Mahony, Josh van der Fleer, and CJ Sander moving to number 8. So it'll be interesting chatting to Jenny about the balance of that back row. But the big area is, and I think, Marie, we have to mention the subs: Ronan Keller, Dave Kilcoyne, Tadhg Furlong, Ian Henderson, Will Connors, Gibson Parks, Billy Burns, and Jordan Larmour. For the first time in a while, we have real firepower on the bench as well. I think we have a strong 23. It's going to be a tough game, but I'm excited about that that team, and, you know, interested to see you know, what Jenny makes of it.
Well, she's back, Jenny.
There she is.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah, no, it's an athlete. I heard someone reference the bench as the bomb squad. like you know, looking at, and as well, you're like, you don't need to be comparing it to the Welsh bench all the time, but there's just serious firepower there. It's great to see Keller back for long again, and just like big, powerful players. And then you've got the likes of someone like Gibson Park, who I think is exceptional at controlling the pace of a game, and that change up maybe in the latter stages, something that can be really valuable, especially when you're away from home in Cardiff.
Jenny, the big talking point was Tadhg Byrne, and where would he fit in? How do you think of him going in the second row there?
Like, I think you want a player that's on form on the pitch. He's been a huge threat at the breakdown, which everyone kind of talks about. But in my opinion, I think he's got actually an underrated carrying game too. Because we are, like, you look at that back row, and they might be a little bit lighter, but you've got Stander there, and I think having someone like Byrne in there can add a little bit of a ballast when it comes to carrying, especially with the likes of that Welsh back row and Faletau and Tipperick. You don't want to mess with that. So I think I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great game, and you want to reward players that are in form, and Byrne has been one of the in-form players since we've kind of came back from the other lockdown.
It feels like there's a bit of pressure on him though, Jenny, just because there's so many question marks in the lead up to this game about his size and his power.
Yeah, but I think it's like, pressure is kind of a privilege. Like, you know, you want it to be. I know we spoke about it earlier, when players speak about you, or whether it's, you know, journalists or other players, whatever. Like that, like, people talk about saying it doesn't make a difference or it doesn't have an impact. It does, but it depends on how you use it. And like, you can definitely use that to sharpen yourself. So I imagine Byrne, like a class player, is doing that, and he's like, okay, I'm going to show you, I got, you know, 80 minutes to put my best foot forward and give it a crack and cement himself in the sides. Like, there's still places I think that are up for grabs. Andy Farrell is still trying new things, so, you know, why not? And give it a crack. You've got like a solid spine in that team anyway, you know, let's try something a bit different.
Donica, what are your thoughts on the second row?
Yeah, I like it. I think Tadhg deserves his goal, I'll be honest with you. I think it's going to be, you know, it is his 18th international cap. It is very difficult. We're used to him poaching those type of balls for Munster. International level is a step up. But I think this is the perfect game to put him out in. He is so highly regarded in Wales from his time with the Scarlets. They'll actually have a massive fear factor of him. They'll know how good he is and the threat he can bring at the break. I heard you last night even making the comments about the size. It's amazing, Marie, at a certain level size does matter, but I think mobility against Wales is even a more important thing. And you look at the team they've picked, they're probably going to try to move us around the park, so I would see him as a bit like James Ryan, a top of the ground second row, you know, and I think he'll get through a fair bit of work. The big one for me though was James Lowe coming into the side. I didn't see that happening. I'm delighted that it is, but I think he's someone that could have a massive game. He got a bit of a hard time after his game against England, and look, I'll be honest, Marie, we always say it, but people don't respect the step up that international level is, and I think now he's seen it. He'll want to shine it. You hear Andy Farrell saying that he's been brilliant in training, but I think with someone, and we hopefully can chat to Jenny about it, but someone like George North in the centre, maybe, you know, someone like James Lowe coming off his wing, ways to exploit North in a position that's very difficult to defend it.
Okay, well, let's hear what Andy Farrell had to say on Lowe and the other selections.
Not really, not in our eyes. He's a great player that's right for this game. You know, when you select a side, you obviously are aware first and foremost of what the right balance is for the team. And I think you can agree that it's a strong side, a strong 23, and one that's raring to go to start a new competition.
Was there a lot of consideration given to the composition of the starting 15 and the replacements bench, given the fact that, you know, there are some people there, including James, you know, who haven't played rugby for a good period of time?
Well, look, it's the world we're living in at this day and age, isn't it? You know, I suppose most teams are in that predicament as well. But we asked the boys to make sure at the end of the autumn that come the Six Nations that they were fit and healthy and raring to go and to perform at the top level of what's needed to be at the best for the Six Nations. And we like what we've seen from all of the squad, really, over the last 10 days.
Andy, sorry, could I just ask you for a quick reaction to the Wales team, which I just got there? George North at 13, Alamon Jones back in the second row, Hal Amos and Zamit Rees on the wing, halfpenny fullback, Lydia Tipperick and Fanato in the back row.
It was expressed in the press yesterday, wasn't it? You know, a few leaks, etc. So it's something that we've been aware of anyway. I mean, George being at 13 is something that they've done before, so he'll be comfortable there. Alan Wynn coming straight back into the side, I'm sure that he'll add an advantage there to the feeling of the group, etc. Lydia coming back in will add a bit of new energy to the group. So look, we expect them to be strong no matter what anyway, and that side is a strong one.
Jenny, just on that, George North moving from the wing into the centre, it's known in rugby that the 13 slot is the hardest to defend in, and you've done it better than anyone. How do you think he'll go in there?
I think you're being pretty nice now there, Donegal.
No, I wouldn't cross you there.
No, 13 is extremely difficult, so it's a lot of chat and that goes on between your inside centre and your winger, and when you're not used to that, it can be quite different. It's like I know North, and it's been mentioned there, has slotted in before, but like his strength is on the wing. He enjoys that little bit more space, and he uses the touchline really well. Someone of Jonathan Davis's caliber is a massive loss at 13, and so I think this is something that Henshaw and Ringrose will look forward to. Ringrose, they're both such intelligent, creative players, and North is outside his comfort zone. Like 13, when there's a bit of space around you, left and right, it's a kind of a scary place to be. It's like, you know, on the Serengeti on your own, you feel very, very lonely when there's that bit of space inside and out of you. So I think it's going to be interesting, but like, I'm looking forward to like that. And he's got like a, this is Reece Amis' debut Six Nations too, so having that inexperience on his outside in this position, I think that's an area that Ireland will definitely try and look to attack.
It's brilliant to hear you say that, because people outside the game don't realise how difficult it is to defend, you know, in those areas. And that's why we were so excited last week about Jamie Osborne doing such an incredible job. But you mentioned Gary Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw there, and even with James Lowe. Jenny, how do you exploit it? What do you do to exploit someone like North in the centre?
Well, like, you kind of want to see in the first few phases of play what their actual defence is doing, whether it's in their set piece, are they kind of flying up, maybe doing like a little banana in out. Like, a lot of the time you'll have wingers that when they slot in or they're a little bit tighter, that over eagerness to get in front. So it's kind of about like playing with a heads up, seeing what's in front, maybe pinging a few behind too, so Samet is kind of a little bit behind the defensive line, so it's maybe a defensive 3.5 as opposed to a 4 up in certain areas of the pitch. So I'd be like, be patient about it. Like, you'd look at Lowe, and I know he's been out for a while, but he loves playing with the ball in hand, and he's going to relish coming up against someone like that. He's a big confidence player. He enjoys his rugby. He plays with a smile on your face. And when you've got someone like that, and you've got that little bit of a nervous belly in front of you, that can kind of add to the game day nerves too. So I think Andy Farrell's selection, you know, I wasn't expecting it myself, but the more I kind of reflect on it, you know, I could do it.
Jenny, do you think Ireland look vulnerable anywhere?
Like, it's difficult to say now. There's like, I think the spine is solid. I would say though that at 10, our replacements, I think Burns has been going well, but there is a gulf in talent there. And although Sexton's been, you know, back in form, and maybe the new haircut has something to do with it, who knows. It's, you know, you don't want to have to, like, he hasn't played 80 minutes in quite a while, and I think they're managing it really well. But I think you kind of want to have another 10 kind of nipping at the heels, kind of pushing each other on. I think with in the scrum half position and in like back row in particular, there's people vying for jerseys, and it's really, really competitive, and you want that across the board. I just think a 10 at the moment, he deserved it. He cemented that 10 jersey, but like a little bit more, maybe we could try this 10 would be nice.
You mentioned it there, and it's going to be an incredible battle at the breakdown, and especially the back rows. Marie and Ruby have stirred it and woken up the Welsh, but Dan Lydiate, Tipperick and Fowletau go out against Peter O'Mahony, Josh van der Fleer and CJ Sander. How do you see that battle going, Jenny?
I think it's going to be interesting stuff. I'm delighted to see van der Fleer get a start.
Yeah.
Any time he's come on during the Autumn Nations, he's been, you know, full of energy from the get-go, really quick off the line. And, like, you've got the battle again, that strength that Spencer would bring to it too. It's going to be good. But then you've got, looking at, like, especially Tipperick and Fowletau in the later games in the Autumn Nations Cup versus Italy, they link so well together. They're not just, you know, poachers or big carriers. They're skillful ball players, and they're very comfortable throwing their ball around and creating space for themselves. Like, I've seen Tipperick a few times in warm-ups do, like, you know, pretty lovely chip and chases. So, like, maybe Six Nations isn't the time to kind of test those at the opening game. But I think that's going to be a really interesting battle. But I think it's interesting how Lydiate, again, is starting maybe to reduce the penalty count that's kind of crept into Wales' game over the last kind of year. It's been few more than I'd imagine Pivic would like, so we'll see how that goes. What do you think yourself, Barry? Who are you looking forward to the one-on-one?
We were chatting about Stephen Ferris's comments on Lydiate, and I think he's been incredible, but I also think it could be, you're right, a bit of pressure for Pivac in the fact that he's going with tried and tested. You know what you get with Dan Lydiate. I thought his performance against Connacht, if I was Warren Gatland, you know, looking at line selection, I think he's someone still thereabouts, but you know, that's not shared by everyone within it. How do you feel about Lydiate?
I think he's, everyone talks about Will O'Connor's being the chop tackler, but Lydia was the guy, the master class before this. So yeah, like I think he's going to bring something to it anyway. I saw him play against Munster down in Fulham Park, which is not an easy place to go play. And although Ospreay's underperformed, I think he's the reason now that Welsh side is kind of creeping back and getting some solid wins in place. Yeah. He's not your fancy skillful player, but like you've got that in Tipperick, so you don't need that. He's going to do a job, do it well, and age is just a number and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see. The one thing I am disappointed about in the Wales selection is that Jamie Roberts didn't get a call up. I thought with the Dragons, he's been having an outstanding season. So we'll see. Maybe there's still time. There could be some call ups yet.
Exactly. They're taking on Connacht tonight, so obviously everyone there will want to put their hand up. Jenny, stay with us. We're going to take a quick break and we'll change sports and chat about the Super Bowl.
Sweet.
Or we can chat about it right now.
Yeah. Happy to chat.
My ads aren't
good. The ads always play up. That's probably something simple.
I'll try again. Ready? Nope. Okay, guys. So you can just keep chatting there.
I never got a prediction, Jenny. How do you see this going? Do you think we can win it? I'm going back now. Ireland-Wales.
I think Ireland are going to win it, but the way a lot of people are chatting, they're talking like it's an Ireland runaway victory, and I don't think that's going to be the case. I know there's no crowds in Cardiff, and yeah, that'll make a difference, but you know, we haven't beaten Wales away from home since 2013, and I think there's going to be some backlash to maybe some of their undercooked performances last year. So I'm thinking Ireland by a win, but it's not going to be a whitewash.
Okay, Jenny, I think I have all of my technical problems figured out. I'm going to give this one last go stare at this.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high-protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Welcome back. The Super Bowl is finally upon us. The Buccaneers versus the Chiefs. Tom Brady versus Patrick Mahomes. But before we get into who's going to win and why, let's hear all of Tom Brady's Super Bowl wins.
Here comes one of greater importance if he makes it. And it's right down the pipe. Adam Vinatieri. No time on the clock. And the Patriots have won Super Bowl.
Looking for a second Super Bowl title, leaving from 41 yards. Looks good. Rodney Harrison takes it in, and 9 seconds remain, and the New England Patriots are on their way to solidifying their team as an NFL dynasty.
Okay, Jenny, while we leave you, compose yourself, because we know you're a massive Tom Brady fan there. We'll bring in our great teammate, Jeff Shepherd. Shep, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are y'all?
We're good, Shep. There is great excitement. It is probably the one game that everyone stops, and maybe that isn't have massive attention or give huge attention to the NFL, but they'll certainly be watching on Saturday night. How are you preparing for it?
I mean, look, guys, going into it, this is just an exciting game. Very rarely does it seem like we have, like, a championship-level match or game and have, you know, the best quarterback of all time and the guy who's getting ready to take his place is to be the next greatest player in the league. And these great teams and, you know, fantastic coaches, Just it's just so much going on. I mean, but I really don't remember being this excited to watch the Super Bowl since, quite honestly, my team was in it, you know, 11 years ago. I mean, I'm just genuinely excited to watch this game on Sunday.
Shep, we'll get into the quarterbacks in a while, but where else in the pitch are you excited about? What are the battles that you think will define the game?
Look, I think where to watch in a key, you know, matchup is how can Kansas City's offensive line that has been beaten up with injuries and they've had, you know, players opt out of the season, handle the defensive pressure of Tampa Bay with Jason Pierre-Paul and Ndamukong Suh and the other guys that they've had. They were able to put pressure on Drew Brees in the first of their second playoff game, and then Aaron Rodgers 2 weeks ago in the NFC Championship game, really by rushing four players, which allowed them to kind of drop seven back into coverage and really just spread their coverage all over across the field. The Chiefs clearly have the most dynamic offense in the NFL and have probably had that for the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. And they should be at, you know, pretty full strength this weekend. And they've got a great quarterback as well. But if they're able to pressure Patrick Mahomes with only four guys, that will greatly impact, I think, how the Chiefs attack this defense.
Jenny, as Donica mentioned, you are a big Tom Brady fan. Do you see any weaknesses in his game?
Oh, well, his speed, for one, is probably definitely not up there. He's like a Clydesdale when he breaks into open space. So, and he would have said that himself, I think. So, he's definitely he's not as mobile as Mahomes. His probably arm wouldn't be as good either, but you just don't bet against someone like Brady. He's going into, he had a massive flex earlier in the week when he was talking about media day, and it was so different to every other media the day that he's had in the Super Bowl, because he's done it 9 times before. That's just like absolutely ridiculous. So I think I think it's just going to be exciting. Mahomes is, they've called, you know, Tom Brady is the goat and Mahomes is the baby goat. So it'll be like a battle of the quarterbacks.
Jenny, I heard a really good line yesterday on the TV.
Got the recipe right and I'm good to go.
Jenny, I heard a really good line on the telly yesterday when talking about Mahomes and the phenomenally insane numbers he puts up. And the quote was that numbers are for regular season, letters are for postseason, and Tom Brady knows how to get those W's. Nobody has more W's than Brady, and that counts for a huge amount.
Oh yeah, like he's just joined the NFC. It's his first year, and he's got them to a Super Bowl final. There was some stats earlier, like Tom Brady was born before Tampa Bay Buccaneers ever won a single game, which is, you know, crazy. So, like, you know, to be going for that seventh ring and bringing players like, you know, like Gronkowski and stuff from, I would be a New England Patriots fan from the J1 in Boston. So I think it's just, I'd like to see maybe another ring in his finger as well. He's just masterful how he approaches the game, and he's so single-minded and focused that yeah, it's going to be an interesting matchup anyway, but we'll see how it goes.
Chip, just on it, it's an incredible feat by Brady to change clubs, not a mind to say 43 years of age, but this is his first one without Bill Belichick.
Yeah, so, you know, we've talked a lot about that, you know, how they would handle each other, you know, handle their careers about each other. And, look, for the variety of reasons of why they decided to part ways in New England, if Belichick thought he was too old and maybe he was washed up, he clearly has proven that he has not. And, you know, he has also said, again, this week, he's 43. He wants to play till he's 45, so does that mean one more year? Does that mean 2 more years? I mean, that would be really incredible, you know, to be able to play the quarterback position, you know, quote unquote, at his age. Because, you know, I'm 43 too, but, you know, I don't look or run or throw like Tom Brady. So, I mean, you know, it is unheard of to be that, you know, to be that old and to still be playing at this level. He has been absolutely phenomenal in the postseason. And this is what he does. And this is, you know, yes, he's won 6 Super Bowls, but I mean, he's just so good in January and in February, knowing how to win games. And, you know, you played the clip of those, you know, the Super Bowl wins. I mean, all those games were like last second wins. I mean, they come from behind victories. I mean, it's not like they're going to the Super Bowl and scoring 55 points and beating teams by 30. I mean, they're playing tight football games. He has been just incredible at doing enough to get his team a W in the Super Bowl.
For all our listeners, I'd just like to apologise for some of the sound and technical issues that we're having. We are working to get everything back on track again. Jenny, you haven't mentioned Gronk yet.
Yeah, well, Gronk, he's not, you know, the favoured receiver of Brady at the moment. It's actually kind of been spread out a little bit. Like, when you look at the Chiefs or whatever, you can talk about Tyreek Hill and Kelce being their big threat. But I think the Bucs, more like, I think Mike Evans and Scotty Miller and stuff, so and Gronk maybe kind of down the line a bit, so we're not going to see maybe the Gronk spike as much as we're used to if you're like a Patriots fan. But I think it's going to, I'm excited. I know we're talking a lot about Tom Brady and stuff, but again, like, the, I think someone like Travis Kelce, who's the tight end for the Chiefs, is a really exciting player too, and it's going to be interesting to see how Tampa Bay kind of try and shut him down a little bit, because he's got like a serious amount of touchdowns for that position. Big guys, really mobile, and like, I know this is going to be, people start talking about like it's a shootout because both coaches really like the passing game, so you're not going to see maybe as many of the ball being shoved and given to a running back. The ball is going to be in the air a lot, so, you know, in terms of maybe interceptions and like a high scoring game, hopefully that's what we get.
And Shep, just in terms of the build-up over in the States, it's obviously so, so different, but is there still as much hype as there usually is?
So, kind of yes and kind of no. I mean, the pandemic obviously is just overriding everything, and, you know, you're starting to see these, you know, warnings coming out, you know, from the CDC and some other places about, you know, gatherings, and, you know, Super Bowl parties are obviously, you know, a big thing over here in the States, and you know, because, you know, you can kind of hang out all day and then the game kicks off, and, you know, if you have to go to work the next day, it's not super, super late. Well, obviously, this year that's not really being encouraged because of, you know, capacity limits on indoor gatherings and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's, yes, it is the Super Bowl. It's two great quarterbacks. It's two good teams. But the hype around it, there's only going to be about 7,500 people in the stands or however many it's going to be. And, you know, so many of them are going to be healthcare workers. I actually have a friend, his sister has gotten a ticket to the game. She is a nurse, and so she flew to Tampa today and is going to be going to the game. You know, one of the other things, guys, I think is really interesting is the Chiefs are flying to Tampa today. You know, you're normally in the host city of the Super Bowl for, you know, 8 to 10 days. You have multiple practices. You know, you're trying to get used to the weather. The Chiefs practiced yesterday in Kansas City, and, you know, it's snowing and it was cold. They went indoors and they had to turn the heat on to try to simulate the weather in Tampa because it's sunny and humid down there. And so I don't know how much of a factor that plays into it, but it is, it's just not a normal week. And one other thing, you know, Tom Brady and the Bucs are going to be sleeping in their bed at their house the night before the Super Bowl. I mean, it's just crazy to think about that. But here we are.
Pretty amazing. All right. So, Shep, in a word, will it be goat or baby goat?
I've been thinking about this. I think Bucs are going to do it. I think it's going to be a tight game. They're at home again. First team to ever host the Super Bowl. I mean, I think the Chiefs are favored maybe by about 2 or 3 points last time that I saw. I think it's tight. I mean, I think it's tight both ways. I think in the end, though, Brady has just enough to get it done, and I'm thinking it's somewhere in the lines of about, you know, 34-30 Tampa wins.
Jenny?
I'm going to keep it short and sweet. I think Bucs going to win.
Okay, well, look, it's going to be a good, Sunday's actually going to be a great day of sport, Sunday and Sunday night as well, so all looking forward to that. Jenny and Shep, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy it.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Green Farm's high protein on the go range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is now time to turn our attention to the Premier League, and Alan Colley joins us now on the line. Alan, how are you?
Evening, Marie. Evening, Donica. How are we?
We're absolutely great. We have a super weekend of sport ahead, lots of it, so lots to look forward to for sure. And probably the biggest one, I think, for me anyway, is the Man City-Liverpool match. A huge one, Alan. So much at stake, really, for Liverpool. City having a 7-point advantage over them with the game in hand. How do you see it going?
Yeah, huge game, Marie. I'm really looking forward to it, but one that's slightly bigger than that is Palmeiras versus Tigres in the FIFA Club World Cup.
you're betting to that.
Because I'm working on that.
So that's why you're into it.
I'll be doing that. I'm only joking. No, it's just after the game, obviously Man City and Liverpool is the huge game, and hopefully people will join us then on the other game afterwards. But you're right, it's a brilliant weekend of sport. You've Man City and Liverpool, a huge game. And we spoke last week, Marie, and a lot of people were obviously writing off Liverpool. I certainly wasn't one of them. But the disappointment then that they suffered on was at Wednesday night against Brighton. A very, very bad result. Brighton played very well, but it was a disappointing result for Liverpool. And I'm at the stage now where I'm looking at a Man City with the form that they're in. And I know it's only a week ago that I was saying I wouldn't write them off. But I think this game, in terms of them winning the league, playing against Man City, I think they have to win at the weekend still to have chances of holding on to their title. Because if they're to lose and fall 10 points behind, I think that'll be just too big of a gap against this Man City team.
And when you think about it as well, Alan, like, this is a Man City team who've had De Bruyne and Sergio Aguero injured as well.
Yeah, it's phenomenal, really, Marie. And you think they've won 9 on the bounce now. Unbelievable form, imperious form, really. And I watched them in the game against Burnley during the week. They were absolutely brilliant. They could have been 3 or 4. They were so good. And what I love about this Man City team, they seem to be evolving in terms of, we obviously know how good they've been since Pep has come in. But you look at Stones and Diaz, the partnership now. But also, if people look at the positions that Cancelo takes up when they're in possession of the ball, they almost become a back three, and he goes into the central area midfield and becomes an extra central midfield player. And it just poses so many problems for a defensive team or an opposition team trying to stop them, because they're coming from all angles, creating their own angles and overloads and 3v2s all over the pitch. And then obviously they get into the final third with the attacking quality to have in terms of Mahrez, Jesus, Sterling, Gundogan now is chipping in with goals as well. And as you say, all this happening without De Bruyne and Aguero, it's phenomenal, really. And they're really playing as well as I've seen them now in a long, long time.
We've spoken so much about Liverpool's absentees over the last while, and it was positive today from Klopp, really, when he suggested that Alisson, Fabinho and Mane could all make a return, and that potentially he could throw in Kabak as well.
Yeah, and that's why I've sympathy with Liverpool, Marie, because you think of all year, I suppose, the performances, particularly losing Van Dijk and Gomez. And I think they've done well just to be in the race, because if you lose your two best players, particularly your centre-back pairing, and everybody at the moment is talking about Stones and Diaz being how good their centre-back pairing is, it just goes to show you that when you do have a solid centre-back pairing, the influence it has on the team, obviously in front of the goalkeeper, who's been brilliant as well. And you go into any match, no matter who the opposition are, if you're losing them, obviously Jota come in, they've lost him, Mane the other night, Fabinho, and you're having to play players in positions that obviously they're not comfortable with, and we see that with Henderson having to drop back, so he's playing out of position at centre half, but you're also taking him out of obviously that centre midfield area where he's been so influential over the last couple of years. So I do have sympathy for Liverpool in that regard. They've been very unlucky with the injuries. Mane, as you said as well, has been such a brilliant player for them, and they lose their energy when he's not there also in that forward three. So it's been disappointing on that front, but they're still chipping away and they're still in with a shout. But I think, as I say, if they've any hopes, which obviously they do, of retaining their title, they have to beat Man City on Sunday. But it's a tough ask with the form that Man City are in.
Is it a bit more than just players missing, though? Like, obviously, you know, Klopp has said that they are physically and emotionally drained, but are teams just figuring out now the best way to play against them?
Yeah, well, you could look at that, Marie, from the point of view of obviously the stats against the bottom six kind of highlight that, because they struggle to break down low blocks and teams that are happy to just sit in. But I still think it's down to the injuries, Marie. I really do. In fairness to the Liverpool team, I've said it to you a couple of times, they've been on the go now relentlessly for two and a half seasons, and they've been so good. It's hard to maintain that standard and intensity. But I still think if they had their full complement of players, they'd be the team to beat, and they'd be every bit as good as what we're seeing with Man City at the moment. it does have a huge impact. And as I say, they've been very unlucky with the injuries. And we all know, like, everybody was raving about just how good Van Dijk was last year. So you take him out of the team, Gomez, then the players. And I think, to be fair to Klopp, he recruited well with... If that was ever going to be a case where obviously they were so reliant on the front three, if that was ever going to be a scenario this year where they might have been struggling, he kind of addressed that issue by bringing in Jota, and that was working so well when he brought him in because he was able to rest maybe Firmino or whoever, and Firmino all of a sudden improved his game when he felt that there was a bit of competition as well. He's obviously lost that now at the moment with Jota, Mane getting injured. He has been unlucky with injuries, and that is the one area where I would look and feel a little bit of sympathy for Liverpool, because as I say, had they had their full complement of players, they'd still be the team to beat, in my view.
And before that game, if United do beat Everton, they'll be heaping even more pressure on the Liverpool game. But do you think Man United will go out and beat Everton?
I think the Wilmery, yeah. I think coming off the back of the disappointing result with Sheffield United, that was a good reaction. The Southampton game, now nobody envisaged that they'd win 9-0, so they'll be banging confidence going into the game against Everton. Everton had a disappointing result against Newcastle last weekend and were very poor, but they responded well during the week, beating Leeds. But I still expect Man United, and this is where it's important now in the title race and what we'll see, Marie, going forward as we come up to the business end of things. If a team plays on a Saturday before the other team plays on the Sunday, it's almost like a golfer in the Ryder Cup. If you get the putt in before the other fella, you have to put pressure on him in that regard, and I think that's what we'll see now coming into the business end. So it's so important Man United playing on Saturday night, get the victory against Everton, put pressure on Man City. Even though they're in fantastic form, they're playing against Liverpool, you'd expect a reaction from Liverpool, and who knows, they might draw points and all of a sudden it might only be a point for Man United. So it is important that they look after themselves and do their own business.
Okay, well, some good news. Dunica is back after a little technical difficulty there a while ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan, I'm interested on your take on this. Do you think United will get a bounce from the 9-0 win, you know, with just the lift in confidence?
I was wondering where you were going there, Dunica. Normally you're hitting me with a bit of a curveball.
He's gone for
weekend,
a snack.
But there wasn't a sound out of you here. There wasn't a sound out of you for 5 minutes.
It's a little Green Farm snack here, lads.
Yeah, to answer your question, I do, Dunica. I think Man United will get the job done, because what better incentive that if you're looking at the table tonight, and obviously they're only 3 points behind. I know City have a game in hand, but they're playing Everton at home. If you win that, obviously you go level on points. And I go back to the point now with what we'll see come towards the business end. I know there's a long way to go yet. We're only 22 games into it. So if they're still hanging in there by February or March, then you might look at it and think they've a realistic chance. At the moment, I think that's all they should be focusing on is just hanging in with Man City, because they're in such good form. But if they're to get their business done and go level, who knows what pressure that might put on City going into the Liverpool game Sunday.
Okay, we're going to leave the Premier League there, Alan. Just one quick one before we go. Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk are both going head-to-head for Richie Towell. Which would be the better club for him?
Oh, that's a hard one, Marie, because obviously if he goes to Shamrock Rovers, you get some stick from the Dundalk fans, because you could almost go back to, obviously, Richie Towell when he was obviously one of the first players that Stephen Kenny brought in. And when you go back to Stephen Kenny's first season in charge, he brought in a group of unknowns, really. And when he brought them in, they were young, hungry players. And Richie Towell was almost the talisman for that team. He was the one that was pushing them and striving forward, and they were absolutely brilliant. He got his move across the water to England. There is talk, as you say, of him coming back now. But if he's to go to Shamrock Rovers, oh my God, there'd be some rivalry when he plays against Dundalk. But I'd love to think he'd go back to Dundalk. But to be fair to Shamrock Rovers, they're the best team at the moment and the favourites to win the league. So it wouldn't surprise me if he did sign with Shamrock Rovers. But it would almost be like Figo at the time he went to Barcelona and the pig's head thrown on the pitch with Real Madrid. You might see that in Oriel Park this year, Marie.
Well, hopefully we'll get some fans there. Anyway, Alan Cawley, thanks so much for joining us.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein and packed with flavour. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back now. I am delighted to say that our next guest is Dervla O'Rourke. And Dervla, there's so much that we need to get through. There was the cancellation of the National Indoor Championships. Then there was the announcement that there was going to be a micro-meet. There was the great performances of Sarah Lavin, Nadia Power and Kira Neville last week. There's everything that's going on with the Olympic Games. But I'm going to start with Ireland's fittest family. Hey, hey. Since you're flying it.
Marie, I'm glad you acknowledge that I'm flying it. Thanks very much. I appreciate that.
That is the sound of smugness. You can hear it down the phone.
On a serious note, though, Dervil, like, people are really commending your coaching, like your strategy, the way that you actually go and coach people. I've had clips of you coaching kids or coaching the teams put into my kids' WhatsApp groups, my training WhatsApp groups. So you're actually going out there and making an impact. I don't know if you know that, but you are.
That is, do you, he can't cope with this. Do you know what, right? I'd love to say that I'm an absolute coaching genius. I don't think I am, but my two coaches, Sean and Terry, are the two, my former coaches, were like the two calmest people in the world. Like, I don't think in my entire career they ever raised their voice or shouted at me. Like, I didn't respond to that. So that's sort of how I coach. And also the other thing I completely have to admit is, sometimes I have no idea whatsoever what they should be doing, so I go with the approach of quietness.
That's not true, Dervin. I know it. Like, I can hear your coach a message. The brilliance of you is to be able to hit the key point that's going to get them the most purchase, the thing that's most important in that moment.
Yeah, I don't, honestly, also the other things, I can't watch it because I get mortified for myself, so I'm just going to have to take your word for it because I can't watch myself doing it.
Well, keep doing what you're doing anyway, Dervil. You're fine.
Not too much.
Okay, sorry. Yeah,
what side are you on here, Crow?
I always go with the girl power thing. Okay. On a serious note, though, Dervil, look, there was disappointment when the indoor championships were cancelled, but now there's going to be a micro meet, which is very welcome, really.
Yeah, hugely welcome. Really important decision. I think, you know, for the sport of track and field, we're in Olympic year. Obviously, it's slightly late than what it was meant to be. This is a massive year. Like, there is no bigger year when you're a track athlete than Olympic year. So indoors is a huge part of that. Also, there's, like, replicate, you know, the stuff involved in indoors for qualifications for the Olympics. So us having a meet in Ireland and having a national championship was really important. So I think fair play to Athletics Ireland for getting it across the line and for Sport Ireland for figuring out a way to do it, because we have a handful of high performance, really good athletes going to the Olympics, and that's the reality. It is a handful, but those handful are really good and they deserve that level of support and detail. So I'm delighted to see it go ahead.
Derv, you mentioned that handful. Who are you excited about seeing? You know, obviously qualification matters, but is there someone that's out there that, you know, we haven't seen yet that you're excited about?
Gosh, that's a good question. Probably, I mean, you guys are pretty tuned in, so probably no one that hasn't come on your radar. I think Nadia Power has been the standout performer, breaking, you know, an Irish record straight off the bat, an indoor season over 800 metres. I think Ciara Neville, I watched her run. She equaled her PB at 7:30 over 60 metres, and she actually looked really relaxed. Made me think she has at least another 10th in her, which would be completely new territory for an Irish female sprinter. And of course, Sarah Lavin has run 3 personal bests in a week. It took her 7 years to get back to personal best territory in 60 hurdles. So those three, I'm like everybody else, I'm just really excited about them. And I guess that micro meet is going to tell a lot in terms of who's in shape, who can go into the Europeans indoors and do something, you know.
Those micro meets, Derv, they're important, but we saw with the Rugby World Cup, everyone was getting ready for conditions in Japan. Do you think, you know, our athletes are going to suffer because they're not able to get exposure to training camps outside Ireland?
You know what? I really don't think so. I think you have to play the cards you're dealt, and I honestly didn't do many camps outside Ireland before some of my absolute biggest performances, and like, the conditions are pretty mild. Like, once you hit April, training outdoors in Ireland is not a problem. Getting access to indoor facilities at the moment is something that's important, and I know the athletes are getting that. So I don't think so. And like Rob Heffernan's group, they're down in South Africa, I think. So the groups that need it and the athletes that need it seem to have found a way to do that and to just go be in their bubble, work through it. But athletics, you know, in terms of compared to rugby, is quite different because it's very individual. So you have to figure out what can work for you. And there's a lot of power in that because you figure out your own system and your own way to do it, even within the whole parameters of a global pandemic.
Dervil, obviously over the last few weeks there's been a huge amount of discussion about the Olympics, and the organising committee there are doing their best to ease worries. They're putting out bits of information about what the Olympic Games could potentially look like. Just in terms of how you're feeling right now about the Olympics, do you think it's going to go ahead?
I mean,
I do think it's going to go ahead, but I suppose my pause was that whether I think it's going to go ahead or not is irrelevant. I think from an athletics high performance point of view, if you are somebody in this country who is planning on being at the Olympics, the only option for you is to believe it's going to go ahead. You have to plan like you will be there in July and you will be fighting it out. And all the other noise around what type of Olympics it is, you know, what will the village be like, what will outside the stadiums be like, I think all of that is totally and utterly irrelevant, because the one thing you know right now is it's going to go ahead with your event. It's not like it's going to go ahead with a completely different event. Like if you're 100 metre hurdles, it's going to be 100 metre hurdles. If you're, you know, if you're Annalise Murphy, it's going to be laser. So you know the basics and that's all you need to know. For me, everything else is kind of fluff. Other people probably wouldn't love me calling it fluff, but it is. Like, who cares essentially about the rest of it? Like, you care about performing, you care about being on the track and actually performing, as opposed to like what's going on in the stands. Like, that shouldn't concern you. So for me, you have to plan that it's going ahead, and I don't see anything actually major to indicate that it won't. I think it will go ahead within the world that we're currently living in.
Okay, well, that sounds like very good advice. Thanks so much, Derville. Derville this week helped launch Allianz's 8-year worldwide partnership with Olympic and Paralympic movements. The partnership incorporates the Paris 2024 and Los Angeles 2028 Games and builds on a global collaboration with the Paralympic movement since 2006 and locally with the Paralympics Ireland since 2010. Now, just before we go, we have time for the Punters Council, and Leon Blanche is with us. Leon, you're very, very welcome. Donica, you are our punter. You're getting
woo-hoo,
very good at it.
Yes.
What is your chargey?
I'm going to play again for Alex Popham. He's head for change. Just an important one within rugby at the moment.
Okay, Leon, here are our bets. Alan Colley has his treble as always. Aston Villa, Man United and West Ham.
Yeah, Alan's taking a couple of chances. Marie, good evening to you and Dunners. It's a 7-1 chance for Alan's treble. We'll push it out to 10-1, nice and simple. A round number, if Dunica picks it, he'll win a grand.
Right, well, we have another option as well, and that is Jane Mangan and the Moyglass Flyer in the Ladbrokes Hurdle tomorrow each way.
Yeah, look, the Moyglass Flyer, trained by Joseph O'Brien, will be ridden by Mark Walsh. Had a nice run, Marie, finished third at Christmas time. Back over the same trip tomorrow. 7-1 as well. I'll push Jane's tip out to 10-1 for the Moyglass Flyer. And finally, the Boyle Sports Boost. I'm going to stick with racing. The very first race at Leopardstown tomorrow, a horse called Holy Macaponi. It's a 13-2 or 7-1 chance. We'll all remember that name if it wins, Marie. Rachel Blackmore for Henry de Bromhead. Again, 7-1. I'm going to push it out to 10-1. And don't forget, Boyle Sports are giving you £200 this week,
well,
Dunners, because
no
she's been won last week.
That's right. We backed Jane Mangan, but I'll be honest with you. A few reasons, Leon. I'm going to go with you this week. And one, Rachel Blackmore's on it. And two, it's just a brilliant name. What's the name of the horse again?
Holy Macaponi. Yeah, look, look, it was pulled up last time, Dunners, but the time before that, it actually beat the favourite.
You give me a dud here, Leon.
No. The race before that, it beat the favourite, Galliard de Menzel. Reopposes right tomorrow. Henry will have it back on form. I think we should go €100 each way for the Boyle Sports Boost.
Super. Thank you so much, Leon, and everyone in Boyle Sports for supporting us. That's it from myself and Marie. We're back on Monday. The brilliant Blondie Tracy's up next.